And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, what I need to ask you is, what do you make of what's going on the college campuses? There have been demonstrations, as far as I can tell, in something like 40 states in the last period, the last couple of weeks, with varying results, varying forms of protest. What do you think this has to do with the election? What effect do you think it might have on the election? Or even beyond the election?
Yeah. Kind of takes me back to my not quite college years, but the spring of 1968, when I was finishing up in high school, and Columbia University was in turmoil. Of course, the circumstances were a little bit different. Things are both over a war. Of course, back then it was the Vietnam War, and we were involved directly. This one is a war overseas that we're not direct combatants in. But we're seeing a lot of passion on college campuses, kind of worries me is how this plays to the general public and where it's going to go from here. We know that in 1968, things went from the college campuses to the Democratic convention in Chicago, and lo and behold, where do you think the Democrats are having their convention this summer?
Yeah, Chicago.
Back to Chicago. Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin are long gone. We don't know exactly who may be the organizers of this thing. We don't know if when the school year is over and finals, if they're held, are over, whether that'll sort of take the sting out of this these protests, or whether there's going to be some sort of organized activism that's going to try to keep this moving throughout June and July. The Democratic convention isn't until August. So we'll have to see. We do know that in these, or at least in some of these protests, there are non-students involved. Mayor Adams said in New York that 25% of those arrested at Columbia were...
Mayor Adams is lying. It's not true.
Okay.
There were almost maybe one non-student arrested, but they basically arrested students.
We know that there was that one lady who the New York Times profiled that calls herself a professional activist.
Yeah, right.
I was wondering in Los Angeles, I saw UCLA, and they were showing the turmoil there, and they were describing where, because it was nighttime where people were, but there was an entire line of the protesters all wearing white helmets, and I don't know whether they had masks or goggles on, but I thought that was kind of unusual to see that kind of universal or uniform gear on something that's supposed to be an organic protest. That looks
organic protest doesn't mean it's unorganized.
Well,
and in fact, these students have been coordinating through Zoom quite openly. They've been having nationwide Zoom conference calls to coordinate their activities. In New York City, the Mayor Adams made a big deal about the fact that they all had similar tents. Well, of course they had similar tents. They bought them all at once.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. The main thing about the stuff in Los Angeles, the violence in Los Angeles, was some group organized by something called the Israeli ICA. I don't know what ICA stands for. I never heard of it before. But apparently it's financed by Jerry Seinfeld's wife, the comedian. And they were organized. They came down. And if you see these photos, they're beating the crap out of the students.
Yeah, that was it was pretty ugly in Los Angeles.
And the cops are standing right there and watching it. It goes on for an hour.
Well, the cops have been standing and watching a lot of other stuff going on, too.
I know. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
There have been students who said, I want to be able to access the library or get to certain places, and they're being stopped. It plays into a Republican meme that Joe Biden is presiding over chaos, and of course it's overshown on places like Fox News, which will run these things on endless loops. It's kind of replaced the immigration issue for the time being on those places. But on the other hand, I was watching, I think it was CNN, and they were talking about polling and what's concerning people. And the things that are being talked about in the protest and stuff was down at like 2%. So there is a possibility that while it makes for good TV and good hype, it still isn't registering with the American people to the extent that that perhaps the Vietnam protests did.
Well, the Vietnam protests, don't forget, went on for quite a long time. This has been going on for a very short time.
Sure.
The 1968 protests were featured in the most publicity was given to the student movement, and it was assumed that the American student body was very much against the war in Vietnam. But if you look back on it and you look at polls at the time, the young people who were being drafted were against the war in Vietnam. The students who were able to escape being drafted, there the sentiment against the war was not as strong. The movement was strongest. The organized movement was strongest on the universities because that's where there was a concentration of young people. But the sentiment was strongest against the war in the non-student young population who were being brought in to fight the war. So the real long-term effect of the movement, of course, the movement was effective. It took years. But more importantly, a whole group of people who became leading political figures, leading intellectual figures, came out of that movement.
Sure.
The long-term effect is very significant.
Yeah. The question is, were they ultimately successful politically? The Gary Harts, the John Kerrys didn't win their nominations or the races. Both became senators, but neither became president.
I understand that, but the complaint that the right wing has that the academy is captured by the left, culture is captured by the left, that the ideas that are prevalent are the ideas of the left. This is a consequence of that student movement becoming older. Those people, they may not have become president, but they became people who led society in every aspect of society. That's the long-term effect. It may not have an immediate political effect.
Well, but the immediate political effect of 1968 was to elect Richard Nixon, or help elect Richard Nixon.
That may be true. That's true. That's right.
Say what you will about Richard Nixon, it he still wasn't on the level that what looks like Donald Trump's second term would be like.
That's true.
And I mean, Joe Scarborough went on a rant this week about reminding people that you know what these protesters got, who wanted to end the war in Vietnam, got 7 more years of war, a lot of loss of American lives and Vietnamese lives, and they got Richard Nixon. And don't forget what Richard Nixon brought us. He brought us a bunch of Supreme Court justices.
By the way, the Democrats were not prepared to end the war any more than Richard Nixon was.
Well, I think Hubert Humphrey, don't forget, they had this, they had a negotiated end to the war, except Nixon and, was it Madam Claire Chennault, went to the Vietnamese behind the scenes.
Right.
And said,
don't settle.
Don't settle. We'll get you a better deal.
Right.
Right. And he had a secret plan to end the war, which was keep fighting. And
he had no plan to end the war. He just didn't want to end. He didn't want to give in.
Right.
He didn't want to give in. There was a way to end the war. That in the end, the war ended.
Yeah. Now Donald Trump has ways to like ending the war in the Ukraine in Ukraine by just saying, we're going to cut off everything to you. And we're going to let Russia in. Russia do what they want. We're going to get rid of. We're going to pull out of NATO. But his biggest, his biggest threat, of course, is still domestically.
That's right. His biggest threat is domestically.
And he and his followers and what's being planned. We've mentioned it. We haven't dwelled on it over the last several months. But this 2025 plan that's being hatched by the Heritage Foundation and others
to 100 different groups
to consolidate power.
Yeah.
And this week he gave an interview to Time magazine and more or less reinforced what we've been hearing in terms of things. He has no intent to run the country in a democratic manner, a small d democratic, or in a small, smaller large r Republican manner, although they're proclaiming that they want republicanism rather than democracy. This is just going to be a power play of loyalists, to entrench loyalists in the government and to bury them and to do whatever he suggests or wants to do, or in many cases, because he's going to be out golfing, he's just going to put people in who are going to do what they want to do under the guise of having the president's imprimatur.
Well, we know what they're going to do. What they're going to do is make sure that women have no rights, women don't have equality, that there'll be open season on immigrants, that we try to deport 12 million. They'll open up concentration camps to facilitate that. They'll arrest anybody who objects to that kind of an approach to life, who objects to immigrants being deported altogether. They'll curtail free speech. They'll make sure that unions do not win elections. They'll expand
they
the right to work.
They will not be able to enforce the win.
They won't be able to, right. They won't get contracts, and if they get contracts, and they'll illegalize the NLRB. Starbucks and Amazon already are in court saying that the NLRB is unconstitutional and should be abolished, and they will abolish it. They'll do all those things. It's a corporate segregationist patriarchal program. That's what it is. It's a return to the world as it was prior to the Civil War. That's what they are. That's the great America that they're looking for.
Yeah, I want to break down a couple of things that you said right at the beginning there about women and immigration. We've seen since the Dobbs decision, and don't forget, this was a long-term joint political, religious infrastructure and conspiracy that was built in order to overturn Roe v. Wade, that we've seen the results of this on women who cannot get, in fact, life-threatening health care. They're even being more draconian now. They're going after contraception, which was one of the criticized decisions of the Warren Court, because it was based on the right of privacy, the Griswold versus Connecticut case. They are going after women even in states where they don't have political power. We're learning this week that there's a petition pending requesting, I guess, permission to sue. We're not quite sure whether it's the women or the doctors or whoever who went from Texas to Colorado to have an abortion where it's legal in Colorado, and try to enforce Texas's law, which says at your stage of pregnancy, it's not legal to have an abortion. This is, you know, trying to, in effect, make Texas law, or perhaps Florida law now, the Florida law says 6-week abortion ban, to make those state laws effective across the country. And that's another consequence that we're seeing of this in the war on women. There are talk, and Trump talked about this, tracking women through their menstrual cycle, just to see if they, you know, could become pregnant, or if they are pregnant, to try to track their activities. You know, and we're seeing that, and who knows what else they can come up with, even though in the states, we saw where Florida, Nevada, Arizona are going to have ballot propositions to reinstate abortion rights.
But if you follow Florida experience, these referendums don't mean anything, because in Florida, you remember, they passed a constitutional amendment to the Florida Constitution giving felons, after they complete their sentence, they're giving them the right to vote, whereupon the state legislatures passed laws so circumscribing that it became impossible to put it into effect.
Right. I listened to a broadcast from one of the people who worked on a project to reinstate rights, and it is. They came up with whole new ideas. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. They'll probably come up with, you can have abortion rights after the 10th month or something.
Yeah.
Something nonsensical. I want to talk about immigration, though, for a minute, because that's, you know, that was the beginning of the Trump campaign for president. He came down and bashed immigrants. I've been watching on television, the Trump campaign is running anti-Biden ads, and they're all about immigration. That this woman was raped by an illegal immigrant, and that person was only in the country because of Joe Biden. That kind of thing. That's where they're. It's obvious that that's where they feel their strength lies, and that's where they're continuing. The question is, are they really consolidating their own base, or are they expanding their base? I don't know, but that is also one of the thrusts that we've seen.
But here, it seems to me that the Biden forces, the Democrats generally, have a very important thing to say, which is, one, there can be no Social Security program without immigrants, because the immigrants provide the taxes that pay for the Social Security program. They take the jobs that otherwise would not be filled. And secondly, the fact is that to the extent inflation is in check, it's in check because of immigrant workers. It's just the fact that the main way that immigration is inflation has been controlled has been because there's a surplus of immigrant workers that have kept down the price of labor.
So I'm not sure that's going to sell to the to those that find Trump appealing. They're willing, as we've learned time and time again, there's a large group of people that are willing to vote against their own interests for different reasons, and we know what those different reasons are.
I agree with you. I know that racism trumps a great deal, but you're not looking for a lot of votes here. You're looking for an incremental amount, a marginal amount.
Yeah.
If all you got was 5 or 8 or 7% of the older population who became cognizant of the fact that their retirement is at stake if Trump wins, their ability to lead a decent life is at stake because their Social Security will end if Trump wins, that's basically what you need to do.
Yeah. Now, but Trump, the Trumpists, and I don't think it's the Trumpists, I think it's the corporatists who want to end Social Security.
Yes.
Have a different appeal. They're now appealing to the young people, saying, we've got to get rid of Social Security because it's going to be worthless to you. And so you don't have any stake in Social Security because you're not going to be able to get it when you retire. That's their pitch. Of course, their pitch is, we don't want to increase the Social Security tax on the wealthy in order to make it available to people in who are coming into the workforce, but they don't say that.
They don't say that, but the Democrats have to say that. It's their job to point out the lie.
Yeah, relying on the Democrats to say that is a fool's errand.
Well, so you got a problem. If the Democrats aren't going to tell people why they should fight for themselves, why would people support the Democrats?
Yeah. Yeah, messaging is, and it never has been, a strong suit of the Democratic Party.
So how are you going to win?
Lots of luck.
Lots of luck.
You got to wake people up. By the way, then we were also talking about democracy. And more and more we're learning that people are even being turned against democracy. We see it in some of the protesters, some of their crazy rants and things like that. But we're seeing it in, more and more embedded in the hardcore GOP. The Texas model, which says we're not going to recognize the federal government, that we want to secede, types of things. But in Washington State, in the last week, their GOP convention came out with a number of anti-democracy proposals. That, matter of fact, they criticized democracy. They called it devolving into democracy. As if democracy has been such a bad thing for America. They said we can't even use the word. Now they're into Big Brotherism, that we should only use the word Republicanism, and we're a republic, not a democracy. That's an older meme that's been around there. But a republic relies on democratic principles. you talk about representative democracy, but you get representatives through democracy, those kind of things. But they also continue to their war on voting. They don't want to have any write-in voting.
Don't they want to not have a direct election of senators either?
Take away the 17th Amendment. But they only want voting on one day, so you have no write-in, no absentee or whatever. That it has to be paper ballots, that you can't have machines tabulating this. All of this regressivism that we're hearing, this is to either restrict the vote or restrict the ability for democracy to function. Because if everybody tries to vote on one day, we know what's going to happen. the polling places will be absolutely overrun, and they won't be able to process this.
Especially since they cut the number of polling places. That's part of their program.
Oh, sure. They've cut not just the polling places, but the times that you can vote. The whole nine yards. I mean, ID. You know, they want people to re-register again. In other words, your registration that you've had for 20 years is no good. You have to now re-register and show new ID, type of things.
And not every ID is acceptable.
It's acceptable.
Your student ID is not acceptable, but your gun license is.
Yes. Yeah, that kind of thing.
But that's not new. None of this is new. I mean, the Koch brothers 40 years ago said that people can only be relied upon to vote their interest, therefore don't let them vote. Paul Weyrich said, the founder of the Heritage Society, it's goo-goo Democrats who want people to vote. We don't want people to vote, he said. Our strength is greater when people don't vote.
Right, goo-goo is good government.
Good government, you know, right.
That's what he had.
Yeah.
And like we said, they've been working on this since the late 70s or 80s. We're going close to half a century for this stuff.
As you have always pointed out, you can't overcome a long-term persistent campaign with a short-term episodic campaign.
That's correct. And I recall, two years ago, I had a reunion down at the University of Pennsylvania. There were no you could walk along campus back then. And Frank Luntz, who used to teach there, was giving a presentation, and I'm very much a follower of Frank Luntz. He was in Europe at the time. He did it by Zoom. But one of his former students from the 1980s, who's now a top Democratic pollster, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, was there, sort of point and counterpoint. They were very friendly. And when I started asking the question, when they went to the question answer, I asked them, I said, you guys really haven't touched about the influence of money. And Luntz kind of addressed that and was talking about what money can do in elections and, you know, institutions. And the Democratic guy was immediately started talking about just the next election, you know, his polling and stuff. I'm going to have the opportunity come July to speak to the State Federation of Democratic Women, and you can be sure that I'm going to be mentioning this to them. I've got to talk about the courts and the Constitution. I think the theme of my talk is going to be how we got here. But I've been working on this. But all of this stuff that we've been talking about for years is going to be central to my thesis as I present it.
Well, we'll talk about this more later. It's very important.
Yeah.
But right now we're done.
Yeah, meanwhile, we have to say Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo, right.
And it's a busy week coming up. I'm facilitating at a Holocaust symposium for high school students.
Okay.
And Michael Flynn is supposedly coming to Blakely, Pennsylvania to show his film about why we need authoritarianism in America. I'll be interested to see if that picks up, if there's any publicity on that beyond what I've seen online.
Well, we'll talk about it next week.
We'll talk about it next week.
See you then.
Have a good week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.